As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Know the past, shape the future. Welcome to the official podcast of the Air Force Historical Foundation.
Hi, I'm Dick Daso, the Executive Director for the Air Force Historical Foundation. For the past 2 years, we've hosted book club and war stories events. The book club, hosted by Pepe Soto and his technical team, examined individuals and events, from Jimmy Doolittle and Hap Arnold to events of the Vietnam War. War stories, hosted by Matt Jolly, focused on the American exit from Vietnam some 50 years ago. The Foundation is pleased to announce that it will release these interviews as podcasts through the rest of 2024. We hope that you enjoy the breadth and depth of coverage, and stay tuned for more from the AFHF. Enjoy this episode. Like, subscribe, and pass the links along to your cohort.
On this episode, we're talking to Dr. Dick Daso. He's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, former fighter pilot, author of the Big Blue Book, along with a number of others. And after retiring from the Air Force, he went on to become the curator of modern military for the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum. And today, he's the executive director of the Air Force Historical Foundation. But that's not why he's here. He's here because he also wrote a book on Hap Arnold. And for the next few episodes of this podcast, we're going to focus on the early days of not only the Air Force, but also the Space Force, and how one particular document had an incredible impact on both.
I think that you people here are entitled to a little bit of background on this thing that we call air power. Now on with the show.
You wrote the book on Hap Arnold a number of years ago and the Big Blue Book for the Air Force. Who is Hap Arnold to you?
Well, Hap Arnold is one of those rare individuals who come along at an unusual time, but it works out to be the perfect time in the perfect place with the perfect motivation. He's a highly motivated young man. He's not always the smartest tack in the box. He's not an academic by any means, but he has some of the qualities that, as we study aviation and look back at military flyers, there are certain characteristics that he demonstrates that set him apart in the Army early in the era of aviation. And really, it's about a man at a moment in time with the birth of the technology that is now the foundation of our Air Force.
And just to paint the picture, Hap Arnold initially wanted a cavalry assignment, didn't he? He wanted to be a part of the cavalry.
There was no Air Force when he started in West Point in 1903, and being in the cavalry was, in retrospect, the closest thing you could get to aviation. It was the thundering herd of horses surrounding the enemy with the big charge and the big gold stripe on your pants. And it was kind of the glamorous end of the Army. It was a very popular service to want to be in. He thought he was good enough to be in the cavalry, but an unfortunate run-in with the cavalry commander officer at West Point kept him from joining the cavalry. He was kind of a smart aleck, and the cavalry coach didn't like it, and it impacted how he entered the Army, in fact, as an infantry officer.
Yeah, what do you think he would have done had that not happened? I mean, there's no telling with the direction would have been for Hap Arnold.
Several of his friends were in the cavalry, and some of them transitioned to aviation later. But in retrospect, all things happen for a reason, and him being put into the infantry and sent out to places like the Philippines to do mapping, he meets different people in different times that end up shaping and molding not only his career, but the development of our Air Force.
At this time, I want also to salute all of those who fly and those who make flying possible, be they of the Marines or of the Navy, or in civilian aviation in any of its many forms, or in the Army Air Forces, for they have all played a part in winning this war.
When did he meet Spots for the first time?
Spots was a World War I combat pilot, and Arnold was not. He was kind of in the staff during World War I, going around the country, figuring out where to build airfields so that they could train pilots. Late in the war, he was hooked up with a project called the Kettering Bug, which was basically the first unmanned missile flown in combat. Never flew in combat, and he tested it. And he was going to get General Pershing overseas to use it, to fly it over the trenches and bomb the enemy. Never happened, but he was involved in that project before the end of the war. In fact, he went overseas, got the flu, the big flu, while he was in transit, and never participated, never met General Pershing, and came back after just driving around after the war was over.
I guess what I find so fascinating, though, is that these two fellas that are so unique, eventually they get brought together, and people seem to find each other when they're in this ethos. Have you noticed that as a historian, that interesting people seem to find each other at the right points, how that all works out, which I think is so fascinating.
It does happen. And partially during this period of time, you have to remember that the size of the force after World War I was over was literally a few thousand people. You basically knew everybody, and which is a lot different than after World War II, when the numbers go way up and things of that nature. But he keeps in touch with the people that he meets and knows and trusts, and he does that all the way through World War II. Some of it is dumb luck and timing, but other times it is, well, this is my go-to guy. And Spots was that guy. He was his right-hand man in operations through most of the rest of his career. So that happens early on, and that happens with a couple other different people. But then some surprise you as well, like his relationship with Jimmy Doolittle, which wasn't always ideal and certainly didn't begin that way.
How did it begin?
Well, they were both stationed out in California, and they were doing some flying experiments, and Jimmy Doolittle was out doing some acrobatic flying on the wing of an airplane. He came back to the landing field by sitting in between the strut and the wheels on the airplane he was a guest in, and got caught by a film crew who happened to be out on the field that day. A director who a lot of us have heard of today, Cecil B. DeMille, filmed the landing and showed it to the base commander, Colonel Burwell, who went to Arnold, who was a major at the time, and told him to ground Doolittle, which he did. And that's how they met.
Now, I realize, in all fairness, I realize who your boss is, and I'm just going to say that, you know, so if you don't want to go down this road, we don't have to.
Oh, no, that's okay. Jonna tells this story a lot, but it's not how Spots and Arnold met. It's more indicative of one of the very interesting dichotomies about aviators, and that is, they're very planned most of the time. They're very cognizant of the dangers of flying, and yet they do some of the dumbest things. And you ought to know this, you're a pilot. There's times where you just do things that are fun. Doolittle did that For example, he did a night flying demonstration somewhere and flew under a bridge at night. Crazy, right? Landing on the strut of an airplane. Crazy. There's he's not wearing a parachute right then. So it's an attitude. And I think the most calm of all the aviators, the early ones, is General Spots. And he had a phrase that he used to use. From the very beginning, airmen were a different breed of cat. And you find that attitude, the kind of devil may care, live on the edge kind of attitude in a lot of the early aviators. Of course, a lot of them didn't survive it. The technology wasn't very advanced. You had to have extremely good skills to survive. Doolittle's a perfect example of that. Crashed five different airplanes, parachuted out of a couple of them, and almost got killed in a GB racer, but his skills kept him alive. Arnold almost got killed in an airplane crash, and it wasn't skill that saved him. He let go of the controls, and the airplane magically leveled out and allowed him to land. It was a different day back in the 19-teens and 20s.
You know, we talked at the beginning that things didn't go the way Hap Arnold had wanted for his own life early on. And of course, we look back on that and we're all thankful that it perhaps didn't work out the way that he wanted it. But maybe that was what gave him this ability, this unbelievable ability to realize that the way things were had to change. And he meets this guy by the name of Von Karman. Can you talk about that? Because this is really where we're taking this, this next look, sort of behind the curtain, if you will, of the Air Force and even today the Space Force. And you think, well, how on earth does it go all the way back to Hap Arnold? But it does. And I think this is what's so incredible.
And you're exactly right. This is one of my favorite stories about the origins of the United States Air Force and also the Space Force. And I don't want to tell the whole story, because in one of our upcoming podcasts, we're going to have Dr. Mike Gorn on, and he is going to tell the Von Karman story much better than I can. But to wet your whistle, the way that Karman met Arnold was a very circuitous occasion of meetings. When Arnold was in California, a scientist named Robert Millikan was working out in California on cosmic ray experiments. And he needed to get his experiment up into the atmosphere to complete all of his measurements. And he convinced Hap Arnold at the field that he was at the time to borrow an Army bomber, and he loaded his experiment into the airplane and he flew it up to altitude to see if there was any difference in the cosmic ray numbers at altitude. And that's how he met Millikan. Millikan then was spending time at Caltech looking to expand the faculty and develop an aeronautics or a fluid dynamics department. And he knew of Theodore Von Karman, who in his years in Hungary had developed a great reputation as a theoretical physicist and a fluid dynamicist. Millikan brought him to Caltech in the late 20s to interview for a job. And it was during that time that he introduced Karman to Arnold. Arnold kept him in mind as a scientist who was working on this idea of fluid mechanics. And what Karman was good at was like river flows around bridge abutments and things like that. Karman, in fact, redesigned the Tacoma Narrows Bridge after it collapsed in the 30s. But he was one of the first fluid dynamicists to change to aeronautics. And as such, when he escaped the rise in nationalism and in Europe to come to the United States, he became a member of the Caltech faculty, and then eventually got hooked up with Arnold to work on the problems of aerodynamics. It's kind of a not who you know, but how you met these people. It's a great story. And Michael, fill all of the details in as he talks to you in a couple of weeks.
This is such an incredible story of fate that these two gentlemen meet. Theodore von Karman and, of course, Hap Arnold. And then the direction that it takes. I mean, this relationship explodes, if you will, some incredible technology that we really don't even fully understand today, unless you've been behind closed doors, perhaps. And some of that's starting to come to light. Just shed a little bit of this, because this conversation is going to be a little bit broader as this podcast continues to explore this idea and truly take us all the way to the Space Force. Fast forward, if you will, to a project that that you yourself worked on when you were active duty.
Right. So right after World War II is over, Arnold, with his focus on technology, decided that he would take Karman from the university environment and hire him into the Army Air Forces. Millikan agreed to that, and von Karman and 33 other really, really talented scientists did a study for the Army Air Forces, a forecast to look into the future 20 to 30 years or so, and look at what was possible, what was going to happen after the 1940s. And that study started with a document called Toward New Horizons. Well, fast forward now. That document was published. It had very out there ideas on space, some of the things that the early, very early RAND Corporation ended up working on in the late 40s, the first orbital ideas for space. We have a chief of staff in the 1990s for the Air Force, General Ron Fogelman, and Secretary of the Air Force, Sheila Widnall, who are familiar with the impact that that early study had.
And how are they familiar with it? I mean, how does that come
Fogelman,
about?
General Fogelman has a history degree from Duke. So he's familiar with Air Force history enough, and particularly his time in the Air Force, being familiar with how that study was initially utilized and what was in it. And so he mandates that the Scientific Advisory Board, which was the outcome of that first study, come together and create another study called New World Vistas. And they did that in 1995. They completed the study. It was, most of it was highly classified. It's becoming unclassified now. But some of the things that were in that 1995 study that General Fogelman, a historian, and the chief of staff suggested we look at were unmanned aircraft flying as a welded wingman. Well, what's the latest news been in the last month and a half?
Exactly.
Unmanned
right.
aircraft flying with a welded wingman. Sometimes it takes technology a long time to develop. For example, 1918, the Kettering Bug, unmanned aerial bomb. How long did it take the services to develop unmanned weapons or cruise missiles or now UCAVs that have the technology that was forecast as early as the 1920s? It's a remarkable story of how technology evolves. That's why we chose this year as a theme for the foundation to look at technological change from 1920 to 2020. And that's what we're going to do as we move forward in this podcast series until we highlight the birth of the Space Force 5 years ago when we get to December.
And we don't only have the generals, the folks that were instrumental in signing all of this stuff and getting this into motion, but we also have some of the folks, if you will, that worked in the engine room on these projects. And you're one of those people.
Well, I was an executive officer on the New World Vistas study, so got to interview and then produce a document summarizing the interviews with some of the most creative minds the Air Force ever got to work with. Incredible people. You'll get to hear some of their stories, but further than that, you'll get to listen to some of the stories from the worker bees that actually separate the Space Force from the Air Force.
And this was White House level, right? White House level we're talking about.
It is. It's the interior, the process, how it actually happened. We're looking forward to bringing that one. That's going to be a dynamite couple of episodes, I'm sure.
There's a lot going on at the Air Force Historical Foundation. So much, in fact, that we wanted to include some of it on this podcast. Give us a look down the road at what's coming out.
Well, I think one of the big things the foundation has expanded its reach on is research. One of our initial charter documents that was published in 1953, when SPOTS formed the foundation in the first place, was to work hand in hand with the Air University. So one of our great outreach programs in the past 2 years has been to expand our programming with Air University, including the library archives. They're doing a digitization project with Air Force Magazine. For decades, Air Force Magazine has collected images from their publications that have never been seen after the initial publication of the magazine and have never been digitized. So in coordination with AFA and coordination with Air University Library Archives, we've started a project to digitize 300,000 of those images. It's a 10-year to 12-year project. Hopefully it'll go faster, but that's a lot of images that will be available on the Air University Library Archive site under AFHF's buttons that will be open to researchers everywhere. It's one of our great charter items. It's really going to be a fantastic project to watch as it develops over time. We're also digitizing the Doolittle collection of images and documents that are not in the Library of Congress that John Doolittle's family has held for many years. We've got smaller collections. A guy named Roger German had a collection of imagery of photographs that he took at Andrews Air Force Base in the 1970s, all Vietnam airplanes in their livery as they looked at the time. Terrific collection of images, things that people have never seen before. And we're just starting with that. We've partnered with the Super Saber Society, and we've digitized all of their in-house journals, the intake, and they're all available now at the Library Archives website. We're working with Air University Press, and I'm real proud of this one. We formed a joint imprint to look at really important publications that are important to read today, not 20 years ago, like A Few Great Captains by Pete Kopp. So the foundation has the copyright for this and also Forged in Fire, the follow-on book. And we're currently reprinting A Few Great Captains to come out this summer for release throughout the Air Force. But initially digital, but we're also going to get to print run this really important history book, which talks about the birth of the Air Force before it became the Air Force. For example, this book covers from the 20s through the beginning of World War II, introduces you to all the main characters who actually make the Air Force what it becomes. It's a very important project. We're doing a lot of website updates. We've got partners in all different locations across the country, the History Department at the Air Force Academy, and all of the authors that have been affiliated with them over time have their works and links to their works posted on our website. We have museum contacts, which was another part of our initial charter, to work with museums nationwide to let people know what they're up to, what are they doing, what are their collections like, and we're starting in earnest to really work on that. We've released our first newsletter. One of our members, Eileen Bjorkman, is editing the newsletter. It is a great piece of work that includes moments with historians, where did I serve, members of the foundation get to contribute to this newsletter, and it's a great update to what the foundation is doing month to month to month. Our podcasts, of course, Matt, you're familiar with that, and we're just getting started on it. But in the next year, the podcast is going to cover the storyline for books, war stories, and also it will put together thematic approaches to what's important historically to the foundations of the Air Force and the Space Force. We have all our morning releases that are still going on. You have to go and subscribe to This Day in Air Force and Space Force History on the website. They're great. They come out every morning. Gives you something to talk about around the coffee pot in the morning.
In addition to the programs Dick mentioned, there's a lot more going on at the Air Force Historical Foundation. Here again is Dick Daso.
We have a whole nother avenue of expansion that we're finally starting to see come to fruition. This past month, we sponsored an Air Force ROTC unit called the Arnold Air Society and Silver Wings in their National Convention's award ceremonies. And Robert Arnold is a PAC member, a Presidential Advisory Council member for the foundation. He came out to San Diego with Jonna Doolittle and myself and presented the Top Cadet Award for the Arnold Air Society this year. As a result of that, all 2,300 members of the Arnold Air Society are now members of the foundation. Where outreach is going, we're aiming for the younger members of the Air Force, enlisted and officers. And so you're going to see over the next 2 years, outreach continue to those younger members of the service, even before they're active, while they're in college, because they can really use the information that we offer them as they go through their training and their young life in the service.
Let's talk about the awards banquet that's coming up, because you're going to have a board meeting and then there's going to be a big awards banquet. And I'm guessing that this is open to folks who are members that might be in the National Capital Region and want to get more closely involved.
Absolutely. 9 May at 5:30 p.m. at the Army Navy Club in Arlington, Virginia, we'll host our annual awards banquet. You can go to the Air Force Historical Foundation website at afhistory.org, go to the events section and register for tickets to join us at the banquet. We're honoring some very worthy and important people this year. First, the Doolittle Award, which is for a unit that's outstanding in combat across multiple theaters in the past year. That goes to the 432nd Wing, the Hunters. From Creech Air Force Base, they primarily fly the MQ-9 in multiple different locations around the globe. And they'll be sending a contingent of people. They can't send the whole wing because there's thousands of them across the country, literally thousands. The SPOTS Award, given for a lifetime of achievement establishing air and space history, goes to Lieutenant General Susan J. Helm, astronaut, first military woman in space, graduated in the first class of women at the Air Force Academy. I'm glad to say and proud to say that she's a friend of mine, and is a heck of a piano player besides. And we'll also give our lifetime literary award to Ben Lambeth, Dr. Ben Lambeth, and he will receive the I.B. Holly Award for lifetime achievement in the preservation and documentation of Air and Space Force history. If you've been in the service for a while, you know Dr. Lambeth, and you've probably been impacted by his writing at some point in time. We'll also have some special awards to give out that night. It'll be a really great ceremony. Our guest speaker right now is scheduled to be General James Slife, the Vice Chief. And he will be talking to the audience as a dinner speaker. We're very excited about the evening. We hope if you're inclined, please join us. It's going to be a great evening. And for all of you members out there, we have an open membership meeting at 3 o'clock at the Army Navy Club that day. Feel free to come with your membership card and you can check in and we will give you the State of the Foundation and you can ask questions and talk to the board members who are in attendance there. It's going to be a really big day, 9 May at the Army Navy Club in Arlington.
One other thing just to point out before we wrap things up for this episode is that if you miss seeing the book club stuff and if you miss war stories and all of that, some good news, as you heard maybe on the promo before the show started, a lot of that stuff's going to become available on this feed. So if you've already subscribed to this feed, this podcast feed, it's going to be inundated with some new content very shortly in addition to this podcast.
Yeah, we can't wait. We're really looking forward to filling the till up and getting everybody caught up on some really great interviews. And it's great to do them as an evening event, but one and done doesn't work for that kind of research information. They'll be available, and I can see great use for these as we move forward in 2025.
Well, great stuff. So all of the War Story series and the book club events soon to be available right here on this podcast feed. Well, Dick Daso, thanks for coming on. And of course, thanks for sharing with us some of the things ahead. I'm looking forward to it. The next episode of this podcast will be out very soon. And we'll be talking about Theodore von Karman in depth. But Dick Daso, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Matt.
For the Air Force Historical Foundation, I'm Matt Jolly. Know the past, shape the future.